Comments made on Serospectives are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Serotech Corporation, its staff, its management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this edition of This Month in Tech for July 2013. It's great to have you all with us, and hopefully wherever you happen to be, the weather is not as hot there as it is here, or at least it's humid here. But anyway, thank you for spending the time with us this evening. We're joined by two hosts. First, Mike Arrigo. Mike Arrigo is a, almost a household name, I think, at this point. He's recorded a number of podcasts dealing with technology, most notably a number of Android podcasts, and has a recent GPS, All Things GPS podcast episode that he's recorded. Mike is also into taking walks, listening to music, and helping to design database systems for churches. And Mike, it's great to have you finally on the show. Mike is often to be found in the chat as a listener during this podcast, so it's great to sort of have pulled him over the fence onto the presenter side this evening. So, Mike, welcome aboard.
Awesome. Hello, everybody, and it's great to be here.
Our other guest is Bree. And, Bree, I apologize. I don't know how to exactly pronounce your last name, so I won't mess it all up. Bree lost her vision, or began doing so, at the age of 8. She is also involved in a number of different exciting things. Most notably, she's a junior partner with Fedora Outlier, which is a company specializing in providing better than excellent training for Apple, all things Apple, I'll put it that way. The really neat thing, though, is that she helped co-author The Old Hat Guide, which is a book about iOS and how to use iOS as a person who's blind. So very exciting stuff. Bree, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
We have a number of different topics for you this evening, and so we'll go ahead and get started right away. And
I'd just like to break in for a moment, if I may. This is Lisa, and welcome. Just want to remind you that we are recording live. If you hear this during the archive, the sounds that you'll hear in the background, the little kind of bing sounds, are when various content is shown on the screen. I had someone call because they said, you know, I like listening, but I don't really need that notification to turn the film strip one notch. But that's what that is. So if you're hearing that, there is actual content. And if you're listening afterward and you'd like to take advantage of that content, you can either look at the show notes by going to serotalk.com, or you can listen live to the event and see the links as they are shown. Back to you, Steve.
All right. Well, thanks very much. And if you are able to, if you're listening to this as a podcast and you at some point have some time free, totally invite you to join us live and participate in the text chat, which Lisa helps monitor. And it's so come join us. We start off this evening with some Android stuff, which I thought would make Mike happy. I thought maybe we ought to just switch things around a little bit just to drive him a little bit crazy, but we're not going to do that. We're going to go ahead and start with Android. And the first story we have for you is how Google, through the Google Play Store, sort of made everyone's phone more secure. That is to say, all Android users, they've basically... And I don't understand how exactly they did this, but they have a feature now that works through the Google Play Store where when you install an app, whether you install it or from another source, sideloading or another third-party source, it will quickly check and see if that app is known to contain malicious code. If it does, it will warn the user, so it doesn't stop you from doing anything. You can still install malicious code if you wish. That's my understanding, but it'll at least warn you before you do it, assuming that it knows about it. So this is a sort of a side benefit to the Google of late, and it was rolled out to all Android devices, I think 2.3 and newer. Mike, have you played with this or seen the effects of it yet?
There's been an update. I haven't. It never said it was updating. Now, starting with 4.2, there is a setting in security that says to check applications for malicious malicious code, but that wasn't Play Store related. So if there is an update in the Play Store itself, it updated pretty seamlessly, which I guess isn't, you know, a bad thing. It's you know, good that that takes care of itself automatically, but be what they're thinking of.
And the article does talk about how they quietly sort of updated everyone's phone. So this is sort of a feature that they sort of snuck in there. And again, it doesn't stop you from doing anything. It just sort of warns you before you do it. If there is a problem, a known problem. And the neat thing about it is that it works even for apps that you didn't get through the Google Play Store. So that's really, really nice as well. Bree, are you an Android user? I know you, frankly, from the all the iOS stuff and the things that Fedora Outlier does and your involvement on Twitter with those feeds, but are you an Android person too, or are you iPhone all the way?
I am iPhone all the way, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, because it's what I do. And with my technical background, Apple is the best and easiest thing for me to use. My husband did try to use an Android, but it just wasn't as accessible as iOS.
So coming from the iPhone perspective, though, what do you think about here when you hear something like this? I mean, I don't even know if there is an antivirus program for the iOS operating system at this point. And so, on hand, the article claims how the claims of malware and things are heavily exaggerated when it comes to Android. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's this idea that it exists, and thus far it hasn't yet seemed to exist in the Apple space. Do you think it's being kind of driven and hyped up, and or do you think it's a real concern and a reason people just should maybe consider the iPhone over Android, independent from everything else?
Well, I think on one hand, I mean, I think it comes down to preferences and what you like and what you want to use. I really think that all devices, Android and iOS, should have some type of security, especially with the way things are apparently being hacked into lately. And if there was some type of security that could allow us to know and was accessible for us to know when we're downloading something that is malware or spyware or malicious, I think would be really good for, you know, everywhere around on each and every platform.
And, you know, it's interesting because people have said the reverse that, you know, well, not the reverse, but have said, you know, geez, everyone is so sure and confident that there's no viruses and stuff on iOS. Aren't they going to be shocked whenever the first one is released? And that's going to totally take everyone unawares because no one has any sort of antivirus, anti-malware software. Everyone's super Apple dependent. I don't know. It's an interesting debate, which I think often does get in the way of people maybe not knowing what to choose. You know, people want to get what's affordable and what works, and when you throw this conversation into the mix, it can make people a little less sure about what to do.
I think good habits are important on either platform, whether regardless. I mean, you can't depend on Apple or somebody else, though, to do it for you. I mean, there's security software, but nothing can take the place of just good old fashioned common sense and, you know, reading things carefully, and when something sounds too good to be true or doesn't sound right, trust your instinct.
That's very true. I remember the I Love You virus that many people got through email years and years ago, and it was a virus that spread itself through email, and the subject of the email had to open it and whatever. And what amazed me is how many people at work got it. And I thought, did you really expect to be receiving emails with that subject line at work? Is that Does that fall into the normal basket of email that you receive on a daily basis? It was kind of comical. I got quite a few of them myself and felt very, very loved for about a week until they cleaned the virus up. But yes, common sense always wins the day, or at least it seems to for sure.
And with Android too, just one other thing to mention, it does tell you when you install an application, whether it's from the Play Store or side loading it, it does tell you, okay, this application wants access to this and this. Is that okay? And if you have an application like, you know, a music application or something requesting access to your contacts and to make phone calls, that should raise a red flag.
It does, and it is very granular too, which I like. I mean, Apple asks you, you know, do you want this program to access your contacts, but it doesn't really say what it's going to do. The Android stuff, it's very, very granular, and it does tell you exactly what it wants access to and why it needs the access, or why they say they need the access if it's known. So there's a lot of control in Android. I like that. It's nice to know kind of what's going on in the background.
I think in many cases, though, users want to be protected themselves. And some people say, you know, Apple's too restrictive and Android is too lenient. But really, I think it's just a matter of the approach. One is saying, we've done a lot of the work for you to install this with a relative degree of confidence. The other is saying, you're going to do more work for yourself, but here's what it wants. But I think really, especially when people are starting out and they don't really know what they know and they don't know what they don't know and they're a little afraid, they really do kind of want to be saved from themselves. And it used to be that Apple was kind of the all and Google was the nothing in the all or nothing approach. And so it's nice to see Google providing a little more information, moving a little more in the direction of providing a more secure environment for new people. I got a Nexus 7 in June, so I'm feeling some of that new person empathy, so to speak.
Absolutely, and I think what they want also is to be protected in a way that they understand. I remember Windows when it used to say, you know, you have performed an illegal operation, and everyone didn't know what that meant, and scared quite a few people. So, I mean, it's one thing to say, hey,
you're banging on my door. It's an illegal operation.
I've worked at the job I'm at now for like 12 or 13 years, and when Windows 9X used to be big, I literally got a few calls where our software had, you know, crashed, and it said, you know, it's performed an illegal operation, and that is how they took it. So, yes, that does really happen. I've seen it firsthand.
So it is nice to know not only that there's a problem, but what do you do? Like, okay, this is a problem, but how do I fix it? So that's really neat. If you are just starting out and you're not sure what to do, which way to go, but you think you may want to get into Android, maybe you're a little bit concerned about the price of some of the iOS devices, there are 7 reasons why you might consider the new Google Nexus 7, that article coming up on your screens in just a moment. Google has released a new version of its Nexus 7, as you may have gathered by the title of the article, and it is better than ever, as it were. It has a much better quality display, beating out the iPad in certain situations. It has an incredibly long battery life, which can play HD about 8 hours of HD video, so very, very extensive video playback. It has more memory, and it is cheaper than the iPad. Admittedly, it's more expensive than the older, you know, like last year's Nexus 7, but it is still cheaper than the iPad by at least $100, if not a little more. It is Wi-Fi. They're making 16 and 32 gig versions of it, with LTE versions to be coming shortly as well. So if you want one that you could use while on the go, you will soon be able to order. I think you can pre-order it now, a Verizon version of the Nexus, and I think a couple other carriers are going to carry it as well. It's still 7-inch screen, which is a nice size, very, very portable, and there's all kinds of other information there on this article as well about why you might want to choose it. Is anyone looking at Mike here, especially because I know he's sort of a gadget freak, are you going to run out and get this new Nexus 7 when it drops?
I don't think so. Because I think it's a bad device. I don't at all. I think it's a great device, and for somebody who maybe already has a phone and doesn't want to get an unlocked phone, or maybe can't if you're on Verizon or Sprint, or you don't want to change your contract, but you want to get your feet wet with Android, this is the device to do it, especially with the new one having the camera. You'll be able to do hopefully some OCR and image recognition and things like that. So that would be a nice thing to have. The reason why I'm not going to is simply because I have some vision. I can see like objects, but I can't read print. So I've already got, you know, the newest Android on. Well, not the very newest one. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I've got fairly recent Android, and I would really gain no benefit from the bigger screen. So that's there really wouldn't be a whole lot of point to it. But having said that, it sounds like a really, really good device. And if somebody wants to get, you know, your feet wet with Android, that's definitely the way to do it, I think.
Besides which, I think his massive collection of phones told him not to. And if you missed that whole discussion and that whole reference, if you listen to the last couple Sero Talk podcasts, we were giving Mike some gentle ribbing about his collection of phones. And, you know, he was going to be on an episode of the show Buried Alive because he does have quite a wide collection of Android phones, but because of that is uniquely qualified to comment on various features. Yeah, obviously I won't be running out to get this new Nexus 7. It was Murphy's Law. It was an inevitability, and we talked about this on Sero Talk as well. 2 days after I purchased mine, there was an announcement the new one was coming. But I'm happy with what I've got.
I was going to say, Lisa, maybe you can tell us so far. I mean, if I can turn the tables, tell us maybe you've had it for a couple of months. I know you've played with it a little. What has your experience been so far with, even though it's Generation 1, Nexus 7?
I like it. It's very different than iOS. The first day I had it, I killed its ability to speak because I didn't read documentation fully, and I expected it to behave like iOS, and it did not.
That sounds like something I would have done.
Oh, yeah, it was rather spectacular, and I can't believe I just admitted it on the show. But anyway, we've all done it. I find that I kind of have a double learning curve because I'm learning Android, and I'm also learning to navigate a larger surface. I have no desire to switch phones. My iPhone and I are joined at the hip, but I wish there were an iPod touch-sized version of Android. I think it would have made learning it a little easier. So I've had to get used to the tablet-sized, a larger amount of real estate as well as Android. I'm certainly by no means an expert, but I am enjoying playing with it, and I at least felt like I was part of the club when my Nexus 7 finally updated yesterday, because a good long while.
One thing I want to mention is, and like I don't want to get us too far off track here, but I just want to kind of throw this out there, because I also wished for an iPod-sized version of an Android thing, and I believe it was Mike who said, hey, just get a phone. And I said, but I don't want to get a phone. And he said, but get a phone. And I said, I don't want to. And eventually what I heard him telling me is, I could get a phone. It doesn't mean I have to use it as a phone. I can just get the phone and use it as an Android device. And the reason I mentioned that is because you can get some pretty inexpensive Android phones. I mean, that would work as a pocket-sized Android device, and which you wouldn't ever have to use as a phone if you chose not to. I mean, you might have the option of doing it if you wanted to, but if not, you just wouldn't use the phone feature. And we're talking way cheaper than an iPod Touch, even. I was looking at one that Mike's been talking to me about. It's like $150 used on eBay or something like that with a keyboard. So, I mean, there's, you know, they go up and down from there. But a lot of interesting options with Android, and I think that's what's exciting to me about it. So just something to throw out there.
My Nexus 7 was a refurb, also off of eBay. Seems perfectly like new to me, but it was that way as well. And for me, I mean, I had thought about going that route, but I specifically didn't because I figured that, yes, the learning curve would be slower, but I wanted to kill two birds with one stone. I wanted to have the sort of tablet experience, and I knew that I really was not in the market. I didn't see any sense for me in getting an iPad.
Well, if Android isn't your thing and watching TV happens to be, there is another new Google thing called Chromecast, which at at $35 is not a Roku or, you know, Apple TV killer, but again, it's $35. Basically, what this thing is it's a dongle-like thing that you can connect to your TV, and you can plug it into your computer. I am a little bit confused about exactly how this thing works, because the Apple TV and the Roku set-top boxes can be used independently, and yet this thing talks about connecting to a computer, or at least having the option to do that, and I don't know exactly why, but anyway, it allows you to, you guessed it, watch TV, and Google is still getting content. That's kind of their where they're headed now, but they want to offer streaming content as well. You can currently access movies and such that you can purchase through Google. I don't know that they have shows or anything, but there's talk about, you know, the possibility of HBO to go becoming available and some of the other networks that exist in Roku land and on the Apple TV coming to this, and that might be exciting. What I haven't seen anywhere is any discussion about accessibility of the new Chromecast, and I don't think Google has weighed in on the accessibility of the device or the service or however it's going to work, yet they are actively including accessibility in other products with the Chrome name. So does anyone have any knowledge or thoughts, or has anyone heard anything? Because $35 is not bad at all for this sort of thing.
I've read a message from... Oh, go ahead, Brie. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, well, I haven't heard anything about accessibility. I know my husband is waiting to get one when he can because he's the gadget guy in the house. And we're going to get it for our daughter who, of course, has sight and can see and be able to use it. She uses the Roku? I never can pronounce that word. And, you know, it's not accessible to us, but she's able to use it when she can. And said we don't know anything about accessibility, so even though it's cost-effective, it may not be, you know, to where we can use it.
It's true. And hopefully, though, Google's accessibility program seems to be a bit stronger than whoever is making the Roku. And so I'm hopeful that we'll see accessibility in the device. The price point is, I think, what amazes me. That's so cheap for this type of thing. I remember when the Apple TVs first came out, and they were a couple hundred dollars, and people were like, oh my god, that's fantastic. I'm going to go out and buy one. And now Roku is I think $30 to $50 for Roku, around the $50 mark, I believe. $99. And this thing is going to come in at $35. These are really great prices, and you know, I think it's going to make it affordable to a lot of people.
I've heard from someone on the Eyes Free list. They posted at least at the Android app, because I heard it plugged into your HDMI port of your TV, basically, and then I don't know if it connects to your network and you use the Chrome browser or something. I think, which of course is accessible. I wonder if that would work. That makes me curious, because Chrome on Windows, of course, is accessible, and on the Mac with VoiceOver, or you can use ChromeVox, but then there's also the Chromebook, and I wonder if it would work with that. I don't know. From what they have said, the app, the Android app at least, to control it, is accessible on an Android device. It does work. So, in theory, with the accessibility of Chrome and the accessibility of the app, at least on Android, not sure about iOS, it should work, I would think.
Well, stay tuned. Chromecast is what it's called. It's going to be $35. It sold out, like, immediately. What was kind of funny about this, especially given the story we just discussed a minute ago, is that it sold out before the Nexus 7 also did, that Google released. So I don't think they were expecting quite the interest in the gadget that it's received, but they certainly got it, expect it or not. So people are very excited about that. So if you are curious about the Nexus 7 and the iPad mini and how they compare, there's an article coming at you here in just a second that has some comparison information. It's interesting to me. I think there's a whole big piece about, you know, just what are you familiar with? And that's obviously a big one. But there are some physical design differences between the two devices, and also some differences in the, you know, what they can do. and the speeds and the battery power and all of that sort of stuff. I don't have an iPad Mini. I don't know. I haven't. I would love to have one, but I'm not like eager to rush out and get one. I think for me, it seems like Apple is catching up to Google in that I really loved and got the Nexus 7 when I you know first saw it because it was the perfect size and Apple didn't have a Mini and it's hard to think that the iPad is big, but when you see the mini versions of these things, it almost does make the original iPad seem big, which of course it hardly is. But Lisa, you have the Nexus. You don't have an iPad though, or do you have an iPad Mini as well?
No, I don't have an iPad in any flavor. I played with one for about 20 minutes, and all the muscles in my face hurt from scrunching them in concentration and kind of doing the, what is this? This is really different kind of look. And I know that it's very doable and very usable, but it is a switch if you're not used to it because the information is displayed differently because, of course, it can be. There's more real estate. And I consider myself a fairly advanced iPhone user. But, I mean, it's funny. Sometimes the things that will mess with your head, I've been dragged kicking and screaming by peer pressure, curiosity, and coworkers in no particular order into playing the game Solara. And you play that in landscape mode. I hate landscape mode. That messes with my head. But I am playing it, and I'm up to level 8, eating my dust. but it's even that is very different. So if you think about it from that perspective, that, you know, of course, going from portrait to landscape or vice versa is not hard, but it's an adjustment.
Did you say level 80?
That's the case, Bree.
I do, because I do have an iPad Mini. We actually have an iPad Mini and a regular iPad in our house. And I have to say that even, you know, being an Apple iOS iPhone user and going to the iPad Mini took me getting used to as well, because like you said, there is more space and more, you know, area to have to deal with. And, you know, you get used to having a certain amount of area to use your gestures, and going to a larger space, especially for me, was a little harder. And I still find myself activating things that I shouldn't on the iPad Mini. But I do love my iPad Mini.
I'm with you on the not landscape thing. One of the first things I did with my Android devices and with my iPhone 5 when I got it was turn off that auto-rotate thing. That just drives me crazy. I remember when I got my first iPod Touch, and at the time you couldn't turn that off, and it drove me absolutely crazy. I just, it's like, no, stay in portrait. Do not change that. One thing that I find interesting, comparing the two, I mean, the Nexus is certainly cheaper, but what I was a little surprised, and I didn't even know this, was the memory difference. The Nexus actually has 2 gigs, and the iPad Mini, I would consider this to be kind of low as far as memory. It only has 512, which I would think that would have had at least a gig in it.
Now, you use Android devices and have many of them, so you've used the, obviously, phones, and you've used Android tablets. Do you find... it's interesting because I agree with what Bree and Lisa are saying, in that it's sort of a mind shift to move from an iPhone to an iPad, because apps do behave oftentimes differently, and there's a whole bunch more screen real estate to deal with. I don't think that's so much the case on Android. It's kind of a more seamless transition moving between the smaller phone type device and the tablet, or would you disagree?
I've never played with an Android tablet. I've never even seen a Nexus 7, much less played with one. I've played with an iPad, a big iPad. When I was at my cousin's, I remember, I think a year ago, they all of them each had one, and I was playing with it. And what I noticed with the iPad compared to the iPhone is things are arranged in columns a lot more. You have, like, whereas the iPhone, it's a little more linear as far as things, you know, on the screen. With the iPad, you had everything was in columns, and you had like these pop-ups a lot more that you had to, that you could dismiss and things like that. But yeah, I think that with Android, whether it's a tablet or a phone, it is a little bit more consistent. But again, I've never actually played with a Nexus. I'd like to see what one looks like, but I have never seen one. So all of my Android experience is with phones.
And if you are the active sort, or want to be more active and not sit in front of the tablet, there's a new game coming out for you. There's been a game out for a while called Zombies Run. It's a game for iOS, and it basically encourages you to, you guessed it, run. And you have zombies chasing you, and you can speed up and slow down and do different things. Complete missions, and it'll tell you when you should speed up and slow down. And the idea is it makes running fun. And the more you run and the more active you are, the less likely you are to get eaten or something. I don't fully understand the game, except people seem to like it, and it's all about getting people active. Well, the author has written a new game, which is also got a plot, this one not involving zombies, and basically you have to... There's some sort of terrorist thing going on, and you have to save the world by walking to Edinburgh. And, yeah, I don't fully understand this game. But it encourages walking, and apparently will monitor your daily activity as you walk and that sort of thing, and will give you extra points or food, or I don't know how the game works, but whatever, the more active you are. So it's sort of a gamified way to get people engaged and active and moving around and away from those tablets, be they Android or iOS. So I don't have Zombies Run. Do you, Bree or Lisa, have Zombies Run?
No. I'd actually never heard of it until I saw the topics. So as far as I know, zombies are, you know, from sci-fi.
I'd never even heard of it either. Of course, I'm not a gamer. I just don't have time for games, really.
I'm not into zombies at all. I just don't get the point. But anything that will help me to get and stay active is a good thing. And they've done the storyline quite well. I play on my phone. They do have it for iOS and Android. They have been made aware of voiceover and general accessibility concerns and are very receptive to that, and have made most things voiceover friendly. And it's great. They took a bit of a break and they're back, and they've released new missions that you can go with. And I've enjoyed it. It's it adds just enough of the element of the unknown. And it's called Zombies Run, but you don't have to be a runner. I've jokingly said that during the day, any other time of day, I play Zombies Run. When I first get up, it's more like Zombies Trudge. And the nice thing,
I like that.
Well, that's where we are, and the nice thing is it doesn't take time away like sitting down and playing a game, because you have it on, and I would say, let's say out of a half an hour, maybe 10 minutes is the story, and the rest of it is your music. So it's pretty cool, and they've done a great job making it accessible, and they keep developing the story. So,
which is neat. Yeah, they have seasons. You can get season packs and so forth.
Yeah,
so it's,
this is season two.
Season two.
And like I said, the whole zombie thing is kind of like, why? But you really feel like you know the characters. And, I mean, there have times I've really laughed. There have been times where I've been close to tears and I need to kind of hit myself over the head and say, it's a game, stupid, but it's pretty good. It grabs you in and keeps you interested.
I think the best story I heard is there was someone on Twitter who mentioned that she plays Zombies Run while doing the dishes.
Uh-huh.
And I want this videoed. I think this is a great way to get into something that is like, I hate doing dishes. I'll put it that way. If this could make that fun, it would be worth whatever they charge for it. But I just, imagine her wearing headphones and running or walking while she's drying, and that just must look incredibly comical. But hey, if it works, why not?
If I remember correctly, the outcome of that, because you can turn zombie chases on, so you hear them coming up behind you, and you have to increase your speed. And apparently, the zombies came up just behind her, just as her husband touched her on the arm. Sorry, I think that would either
be my
yeah. husband or my late husband.
I'll bet a scream was generated there, probably.
Probably a slap.
Did the dishes survive? That's the...
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. What about the dish?
Yeah.
But if that husband has gone on the run, how's that for a little bit of an out there transition? If that husband has decided that he needs to go for a run... he certainly has some help to aid him on that run, should he need it, in the form of the Seeing Eye GPS app. And I'm sure the fine folks at Sendero have never had quite such an off-the-wall introduction to their product.
That's true, they haven't, and their product does not contain any zombies, but it's the long-awaited GPS app that Sendero has been promising. I think they talked about it at last year's convention and had mentioned it would be within a year, and they made good on that promise. It is available. You have to purchase it, though. There is no demo version of it, and it comes in a one or two-year version. I don't know if there's a three-year version or not.
It's one and three.
Is it one and three? Two and three? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. One and three.
But it's gotten mixed reviews, to be honest. It's made some people very, very happy. A lot of people are excited that Sendero is getting into this space, because Sendero is known for producing high-quality GPS apps that provide a lot of information to the blind that isn't provided in other apps. For example, many GPS apps will tell you what street you're on and if you turn right or left and whatever, but they don't often describe the shapes of the intersections to you, or they don't tell you if it's a three-way intersection or a four-way or, God forbid, a five-way intersection. There's a lot of sort of visual cues that most mainstream GPS apps sort of take for granted, and Sendero, I think that's sort of their niche. So, like I say, a lot of people are excited that it finally exists. It does provide a lot of information, and a lot of people are saying, well, but it's missing a lot of sort of flagship features that exist in other Sendero products and are really disappointed with it. So it's kind of unfortunate that they're getting mixed reviews right at the onset, but exciting in that it is only version 1. It's only been out, well, for a couple of weeks, and it can only get better from here. So there's always the potential to, you know, for them to upgrade and add features as they get user feedback. So I admit, I did go out and purchase the app. I have quite the collection of GPS apps, and I fall in the mixed category. There are aspects of it that I really, really like and don't have in other GPS solutions, and others that I wish it had that I do have in other GPS solutions. Does anyone else? Mike, I know you've purchased it as well, right?
Yeah, I've got it, and I've actually, if anybody wants to check it out, because we want to try to go into it here, on the Blind Geek Zone website, I've actually done a comparison between the two blindness-specific GPS apps. Now, one, they each run on different platforms, but Nearby Explorer and the Seeing Eye app. I'm with you. I think it's mixed. It's a good start. It's a good 1.0, but there are a few things that I think are just lacking in it. The biggest ones, for me at least, are that it announces, like, when you come up to a street, and it'll tell you, like, what's close to you, but it doesn't update, or, well, it updates it, but, like, you know, 300 feet away from your next street, 150 feet away from the next street, and to read that, a lot of times you have to actually interact with the screen to do that. And the other big thing for me is the app does not work when you lock the screen. When you turn the screen off, the app does not work at all. And then when you fire it back up, it has to reacquire your GPS position, and it ends up reading actually the previous information on the screen. And when you shake the device to refresh, it reads everything again, like your altitude, your GPS sensitivity, that type of stuff. And whereas Nearby Explorer on Android, you can customize all that. You can check and uncheck what you want and don't want spoken, and you know, you can put the, you can turn the screen off, and the phone will continue to tell you everything that that you need. And Steve, it sounds like you've had a similar experience between the two apps also, because I know you have them both.
There's a lot, and I think, like you said, though, it is a good 1.0. I'm glad that Sendero did get into it, and, you know, maybe it is missing features I wish it had, but so are a lot of other apps, and especially right out of the gate, I think it makes sense for them to sort of gauge where user feedback is coming from and what users really want to see, and so it's very exciting. You can find it in the App Store. The other big complaint is that there's no demo or trial version of it. You have to buy it right at the onset, and it's kind of got a unique registration system that differs in the way that other apps that you purchase in-app do. There are a number of podcasts that have been created, I believe, on the app. I've seen a couple floating around Twitter, so you can get some information and sort of a virtual demo of the app, and I think Sendero's probably done some as well at this point. The user manual is also available online, and there are links to that as well. And
the lack of a demo, though, is not necessarily Sendero's fault. I guess the best they could do is just a one-month subscription. One of Apple's policies is no demo software in the App Store.
Yeah, and I don't know the reasoning behind all of it. I just know that that's, a lot of people are saying, geez, I'd love to buy it, but there's not a version of it that I'd want to kind of play with it before I commit to it. And so, you know, maybe they can do a one-month thing, maybe they can't, I don't know, but that's just put a lot of people off. So, but I'm sure Sendero is hearing the complaining, and they're very active on Twitter and Facebook and that sort of thing. So, so there you have it.
And Mike mentioned Blind Geek Zone, and there is a link to that in the show notes. I could not link directly to the search results, but if you go in and you put Mike's name in, you can see the podcast that he has contributed there. I'd like to mention a few things, if I may. This is sort of a, not really at the halfway point because we're a bit beyond that, but kind of an intermission of sorts. I just want to fill you in on a few things. One is that there are plenty of stories, very good stories, that it does not look like we're going to be able to cover tonight. We've taken some deeper, closer looks at some of these things, which I think is really great. But there are some stories that we will not cover. So if you're interested to see those, I would recommend that you take a look at the show notes when they are made available, which will be a couple days. I'd also like to mention we have some exciting things coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be featured on... Wow, and I went to say it, and I realized this is kind of a tongue twister. We're going to be featured on Fedora Outliers Follow Friday.
Very good, Lisa.
Say it faster. You know you
Fedora's
can do it.
Follow Friday, and I kind of
say it 10 times fast.
That's okay. But we hope that you will listen and read that. And then this coming Tuesday, August 6th, we are honored to be invited. We will be participating with Fedora in their access chat. I like that better, just because it's not so alliterative. But either way, both are going to be...
It's more fun.
Yes. Oh, another Fedora is fun. You could really start something with that. But we are thrilled for the chance to be doing that. We'll also be on Accessible World later in the month, talking about Serotech Socializer. We are a little bit here, there, and everywhere. July, it was conventions. This month, it seems to be internet and social media, and we look forward to interacting with any of you at those times. So that is a bit of what's going on. And while I am going on, let me also remind you that if you would like, after the chat, that you're welcome to join us in the tech chat room on Samnet. If you have a membership, you can sign up for a free 7-day trial. by going to www.sa2go, and that's SA like system access, the word two, T-O, and the word go.com. And we'd like to move on and cover a few more stories. This one really fascinated me. Before coming to work with the fine people at Serotech, I worked as a rehab teacher for 12 years for the state of Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I did there was teach Braille. And who among us who learned Braille does not remember being a kid and confusing the daylights out of I versus E, not so much the spelling. I mean, I remember hearing, you know, people chanting I before E except after C, and I'm like, I wish they could come up with something like that in Braille. You know, something that would make sense, that would tell you which way this one went, and that made it the I, this which way this one went, and that made it the E. Or the F, D, H, and J. You know, it was a little three-dot configuration, but which one went which way? And, you know, the longer I knew Braille, I started hearing things. Like, for example, it wasn't until I was an adult that I heard someone give the hint, well, the Braille letter H, if you think about the top left-hand corner of a capital H, that's what it looks like. The same with the letter F. It looks like the top left corner of a capital F. I also heard things like, you know, if you have the letters A through J, and then you put a dot 3 under it, that makes your next 10 letters. And the W is the exception because they didn't have a W in French, but then you put 3, 6, and that makes your remaining letters. Things like that, little codes, little mnemonics really help. And we have a story, which I will bring up in just a moment, about a very gifted woman who is in the state of Minnesota and has come up with a system for teaching Braille and making it easier, especially for adults to learn in a simpler way. There are teaching approaches and mnemonics and things that she has devised. And with the literacy crisis, I think anything that can be done to encourage the use of Braille and the easier learning of Braille, that's all for the better. I found this really fascinating. What did the rest of you think?
I did too, Lisa. I'm a late in life for learning Braille. I didn't learn Braille until I was in my 20s. And so learning as an adult was a lot harder than I ever imagined. And I actually, after I was reading, while I was reading this article, my teacher, my instructor, who was actually cited, I think she was actually a pioneer of her time, because she made Braille fun. And she kind of used not this exact type of model because it wasn't available back then, but she incorporated the funness and uniqueness of what Braille could be. It was structured to a point, but she, you know, would, okay, you know, we're going to learn our alphabet, but we're going to learn it, you know, labeling your CDs. For little tricks, like the way I remember the I from the E, like you were saying, I is 2-4. So you've got 2-4, like in glasses, which is makes the E, I is the opposite way. So she came up with all these little tidbits, for me, which made, you know, learning Braille fun. And of course, at that time, it was something I wanted to learn. It was like a foreign language, so I was learning something that really excited me. On the other hand, my husband has tried to learn Braille 4 or 5 times now, and he just can't do it. It's very frustrating to him. He just cannot figure out what they are. He knows his alphabet. That's pretty good, but that's about it. So to see this type of model come up, it's exciting. And it's just something so new. And I think it's something we really need to enforce and incorporate, not just for adults learning, but, you know, for anybody who wants to learn Braille.
It's exciting for teachers. It was kind of like this sitting around, okay, well, you know, I have this idea, and, well, I do this, and this one does that. But this puts it together. It really, it empowers learners, but it also empowers teachers and gives them, you know, I'm sure that if I read this curriculum, which I would love to when it's out, I would see plenty of ideas that I use and that other people use. But what she's done is really put them all together.
Exactly. She's really a pioneer of time, and you know, and she's actually, you know, incorporating to where, you know, not to teach so structured, to, you know, to find a way to, you know, have your student, you know, be able to read, you know, the code, to read the Braille, and to find a way to do it. Again, I go back to my teacher, because I'm a one-finger Braille reader, and it's just I could never get any, you know, any faster that or use more than one finger. And, you know, and she said, as long as you're reading, you know, whatever you want to do to make it work to where you will read, you know, what is in front of you, then do that. So yeah, it's very exciting and interesting to see all of this come about.
I'm with you, Bree. I'm also a one finger Braille reader. My left index finger is my Braille reading finger. If I ever lose that one, I'll be in trouble as far as reading Braille goes, because that's my Braille reading finger right there.
And there was a recent article about a girl who reads using her lips. She actually did her exams, and was it? I forget the country she's in, but she reads Braille using her lips. I, of course, had to try it. It didn't work for me, but I'm glad it worked for her, and I think that's really incredible. And I apologize to people on the bus who witnessed my attempts at reading Braille in this fashion.
Oh my! Well, that must have been a sight to see.
That's where I was.
Steve.
Okay, I'm trying to get rid of that visual now.
I saw this crazy.
Oh, sir,
man.
Are you trying to kiss your page there or something?
Exactly.
I love this book.
Honey, you'll never believe what I saw on the bus.
Yeah.
I saw a guy trying to kiss his Braille paper.
That's enough to make me smile for the rest of the week.
Yeah. That's great.
And probably a lot of other people, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now Steve will be remembered not as the fine host of Sarah Spectives that he is, but as the guy who kissed the Braille. So if we titled podcasts, if we titled Sarahspectives, that would have to be this episode's title. But let's try another title on. How about the title of this article, and this is our last, and thought about skipping this, but I really think this is a message people need to hear. This one is called Leery About the Cloud. Chances are you've been using it for years, and people don't get that. You know, they'll say something like, I just don't want to use that, insert expletive here, cloud. Oh, I just got something come in on Dropbox.
Guess what? You're using the cloud.
Yeah, meet the cloud.
And it's also in areas that people don't really tend to think about. People think about signing up for services that are cloud-based, such as Dropbox or the various Apple services that exist, Amazon, Google, they all have cloud things. But there's a lot of servers and, you know, retailers, for example, that use cloud computing to host their servers, and their data centers are often cloud-based so that they are... Oh, hold on a second. We have this weird audio flash thing going on. I'm not sure if anyone else just heard that. Yuck. There's a lot of other things. Email is often hosted in the cloud. People think about sending and receiving email, but don't realize that often that too is cloud-based. We mentioned servers, so if you shop at your favorite retailer, you may be putting information into the cloud as well, because they may be using it. So there's lots
of... a wedding registry or a baby registry.
Yeah.
You know, you can check it at any store, and so can everybody else.
Even accounts. I mean, anytime you store something online, when you're logging in to an account, they've got your stuff on their server. That's how they verify you. It's like, that is stored, you know, that is stored on the internet in the cloud, whatever you want to call it. It's like, you know, that's been around really for really in a lot of ways, ever since the internet has really taken hold. It just wasn't called the cloud, mm-hmm. necessarily.
Just wasn't called it, yeah. That's fascinating, too, that exactly what you said. I mean, it's been around. The concept's been around. It just didn't have a name. And now that we've put a name to it, people are often nervous and scared about, you know, the security of the cloud. But it's always been there. It's, you know, it's not a new concept. So very interesting article that discusses other instances where you may inadvertently be using the cloud, and talks about services that would do that and how you might recognize those things. So cloud, not all bad.
It's just a good reminder. I mean, if you don't like the idea of your stuff being in multiple places, you probably shouldn't have it in one place. I mean, if it's not secure in one place, it's probably not significantly more or less secure if it's in multiple places. And there is, of course, potential problems with it, but there's so much to be gained. I think about email. I love the fact that if I delete something from my iPhone, it's gone from my computer and vice versa. Or if I update a contact on my computer, I can just type. I don't have to look for the individual letters on my iPhone to more laboriously put in that contact. So there are a lot of advantages, and I think it's good to kind of have a balanced approach and know both advantages and disadvantages. And one of the biggest disadvantages that we have about now is that we are out of time. I'd like to thank you so much for joining us and listening, and thank you to our guests for joining us. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Bree. Let me actually turn this back over to Steve to finish out with our guests and to send us on our way for the evening so that he can get back to alternate methods of Braille reading. You'll never live that one down.
No, you won't.
I will never live that one down, and I should never have said it. But, you know, the sad part is now nobody's probably ever going to let me borrow their Braille display, which is a side effect totally would understand.
Yeah.
Oh, what a shame. Anyway, thanks everyone for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. We did have some other stories that I believe will be in the show notes that we didn't cover just due to time, but very interesting stories. Just the same, to urge you all to read them. If, like I say, you are listening to us over the podcast, feel free to drop in one of these evenings if you're able and join us live. The chat is always exciting. It's been pretty active this evening. We don't read all the chat messages on the show, but it's interesting that there's sort of the side dialogue happening, so it's a lot of fun. Anyway, thanks also to Bree and to Mike, and as always, to Lisa and the Saratalk team for making this all happen. As always, I appreciate it. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you all next month for another This Month in Tech.